You're listening to Weird Medicine with Dr. Steve on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com. I need some touch in.
I love to masturbate. I love to masturbate. I love to masturbate. I love to masturbate.
Weird Medicine contains mature contents that may be offended to some listeners. What did I do wrong then? You know, your old house is like an oven.
I've got diphtheria crushing my esophagus. I've got Ebola virus dripping from my nose. I've got the leprosy of the heart valve, exacerbating my incredible woes. I want to take my brain out and blast it with the wave, an ultrasonic echographic and a pulsating shave. I want a magic pill for my ailments, the health equivalent of Citizen Kane. And if I don't get it now in the tablet, I think I'm doomed and I'll have to go insane. I want a requiem for my disease, so I'm paging Dr. Steve.
Dr. Steve!
No.
Weird Medicine, the first and still only uncensored medical show in the history of broadcast radio, now a podcast. I'm Dr. Steve with my little pal, DJ Opie AIDS. It's an inside joke. DJ Logan. DJ Logan Field.
Just Logan Field.
He looks just like Opie, everybody. I put out a Twitter that said, reminiscing with an old friend about the golden age of radio. I didn't say that it was Opie, and I didn't say it won. And a whole lot of people assumed that it was.
Apparently.
They said that he'd lost a lot of weight.
Yeah, so. I guess I, apparently I, I look a lot like Opie to some people, which is cool with me.
Not nearly the radio chops that Opie has. Obviously.
Not nearly, no. He's way better than me.
This is a show for people who would never listen to a medical show on the radio or the internet. If you have a question you're embarrassed to take to your regular medical provider, or if you can't find an answer anywhere else, give us a call at 347-766-4323. That's 347. Take it away, DJ Logan.
Poohead. Yeah.
Follow us on Twitter at Weird Medicine, at Lady Diagnosis, and at Dr. Scott WM. Visit our website at drsteve.com for podcasts, medical news, and stuff you can buy, or go to our merchandise store at cafepress.com/weirdmedicine. Most importantly, we are not your medical providers. Take everything here with a grain of salt. Don't act on anything you hear on this show without talking it over with your doctor, nurse practitioner, physician assistant, pharmacist, chiropractor, acupuncturist, yoga master, physical therapist, clinical laboratory scientist, registered dietitian, or whatever. All right, very good. And what you're, the sounds you're hearing are of a Super Android 23 back again in studio with DJ Logan.
At this, and it, this is all you,
like,
sir.
All rock stars, DJ Logan is whatever he is. He can't speak coherently right now. Sorry, boys.
I can't believe you don't know the theme song from Barney Miller. You play the bass, for crying out loud. Everybody who plays the bass can play Barney Miller.
No. I can play...
Ooh, listen to that.
We had fun recording this earlier.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That is me on the synthesizer. I'll take credit for that.
You're killing it, yeah.
Bass shit was terrible.
I'm pushing buttons.
I'm editing that out. Sounded much better in rehearsal. Anyway,
you've got some nimble fingers there, sir.
Yeah, for an arthritic old asshole. Don't forget to check out stuff.drsteve.com for all your online shopping needs. That's stuff.drsteve.com, and I've added some new things, including some information for peripheral neuropathy, dingo dust. A dingo ate your penis. It's for people with sweaty genitalia.
Ooh.
Yeah, and you put it on and it's quite delightful.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So check that out at stuff.drsteve.com. Go to tweakedaudio.com, offer code FLUID for 33% off the best earbuds on the market for the price. And that's what we're using to listen to this show with right now. And simplyherbals.net, that's Dr. Scott's website. If you'd like to lose weight with me, go to Noom, N-O-O-M, .drsteve.com. It's the only thing I've ever had that's allowed me to have sustained weight loss over some period of time where I'm right at my ideal body weight, and I've been there for, I gained weight over vacation, mm-hmm. No big deal. I just said, fuck it. I know how I can lose it again.
When we saw you in Durham.
I was just on the way.
Yeah.
Then. If you're interested, if you're lazy, check out, like I am, check out Freshly. They're basically fresh prepared meals that make eating right super easy. You can use my link to get 6 dinners for $39 for 2 weeks. That's $20 off each week. Give it a try and let me know what you think. Go to freshly.drsteve.com. And then lastly, if you're interested in getting archives of the show, you can go to drsteve.com. There's a link on the front page. For $30, I'll send you a thumb drive with all the shows on it. Or you can go to premium.drsteve.com. It's $1.99 a month. And if you use offer code FLUID, it's half that. And then you can get archives of all of the shows and just have full access. We have an app to it on the App Store and at Google Play. So anyway.
All right. Got it.
Very good. You do?
Mm-hmm.
Well, aren't you something? So, I don't know that we want that playing behind us the whole time.
Nah. A little too distracting.
All right, you guys want to answer some phone calls?
Sure. Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Oops. Let's try that again.
Number one thing, don't take advice from some asshole on the radio.
All right, very good. Let's answer a quick question here.
Come on.
What?
Could you pick this? Right. Hey, Dr. Steve. Now they're saying that mouthwash can maybe cause diabetes. I mean, come on. Could you pick this apart like you usually do with some of these studies for the podcast? Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's crazy. So
that's a little out there.
Well, okay, so you hear something that's out there, but you got to research it because sometimes the stuff that's out there is not bullshit.
Yeah.
For example, the idea that bacteria can cause stomach ulcers, the gastroenterologist thought that was hilarious for the longest time until they finally proved that it was really true. You know, you can go in and you can sample some ulcers and they'll have this Helicobacter pylori in them. And then when you cure it, they go away. Now, you're trying to say stuff, but you don't want to be on the show. So, okay. All right. Super Android 23 brought a groupie. And she said she didn't want to be on the show. But the whole time I'm talking about Helicobacter pylori, she's raising her hand and saying things. Okay, well, do you want to talk or do you not? Okay, there you go.
Well, I did have a baseball-sized stomach ulcer.
Oh, damn.
That had a blood vessel that was just squirting blood. Ooh. Into my stomach. Yeah, almost.
Yeah, we talked about that last show. That
and
can be fatal.
They gave me an antibiotic, and in a month, it was gone.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Yeah. So that
fulfilled
Koch's principles that they isolated the cause and then demonstrated that removing it would make it go away. So, very interesting. So there you go. Okay.
Mouth washing.
Turning your mic back off. Now, so I'm just saying, I only bring that up because that sounded like BS at the time.
Well, I mean,
I remember when I was in medical school, when AIDS was first happening, we didn't have people with HIV because we didn't know what caused it yet.
Right.
So there were just AIDS patients.
Grid.
And I remember we were talking about, I was working in an immunology lab, and the immunology postdoc, and I can't remember his name, said, oh, there's no way. He was laughing at us. We were saying, it's got to be a virus. He's like, no, there's no way that could be a virus that causes that. And, you know, so even those guys got it completely wrong. Well, right, he was a dumbass anyway. I don't know how he got his PhD, but anyway.
They're just handing them out there.
So this is from diabetes.co.uk, patients with high risk of type 2 diabetes who use mouthwash twice a day are 55% more likely to develop the condition within 3 years, a new study suggests. So these are not just normal people. These are people already at high risk of type 2 diabetes. So
right.
People with pre-diabetes, people with glucose intolerance, morbid obesity, that kind of stuff. While an association be observed between mouthwash and type 2 diabetes, the findings do not indicate the mouthwash causes it. Of course, but the clickbait doesn't say that.
Right, right.
So can you think of ways that, because they didn't do a prospective study on this, they did a retrospective study.
Right.
So what they did, they evaluated 1,200 overweight people aged 40 to 65 who are deemed at high risk of developing type 2 diabetes.
Okay. They don't have it. Yet.
Right. 17% of the study developed pre-diabetes or type 2 diabetes. And this rose to 20%, which rose to 20% for those who used mouthwash once a day. So that was, it went up 3%, right?
Okay.
However, amongst twice daily users of the mouthwash, the rate rose to 30%. Now, this is... Now, they're saying the indiscriminate routine use of antibacterial mouthwash products may cause more harm than good in light of recent studies, said the study authors. Okay, can you think of another way that this may be correlated but not causally related?
Not off.
Well, okay, so what did one of the symptoms that people with diabetes have is they're pissing out sugar.
Yeah.
Okay, so they have polyuria. But to replace all that piss, what do they have? Polydipsia. They start drinking more water, right? So they're thirsty, and they get dry mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And people with dry mouth have halitosis,
mm-hmm.
and people with halitosis use more mouthwash.
There we go. Yeah.
So there you go. This is what I say to them, and this is what I say to DJ Logan.
Give yourself a bill.
That may only be what it is. They would have to do a prospective study and follow this population. And my understanding was this cohort that they had was not looking for mouthwash use and diabetes. It was a fishing expedition, which is what we call a study where you just do, you know, look at a whole bunch of different things and see if anything shows a statistically significant answer. Those are not valid studies to make a conclusion from.
Right.
Those are good studies to then base a follow-up study where you're actually controlling for these variables.
Okay. Sure.
So, here you go. Oh, way down at the bottom, they say there is also a possibility those who use mouthwash more often may be more likely to have poorer health and possibly poorer diets compared to those who do not.
Give yourself a bill!
Come on. The way the study was run means the researchers cannot say for certain whether mouthwash was definitely a contributing factor. It does, however, ask questions. This is just what we just said, so I'll give myself one of these.
Give yourself a bill!
But what does the headline say? Twice daily mouthwash use could increase risk of type 2 diabetes. Now, let's look this up. I just want to, you know, Frank Zappa said writing about music is like dancing about architecture. And writing about medical stuff, I don't have a good analogy. It's unbelievable how shitty it is. Medical journalism is shitty. I just wanted to throw out the Zappa thing to sound smart, but then I sounded stupid because I couldn't come up with a good corollary for this. But anyway, let's look up twice. Let's do mouthwash causes diabetes.
I've never heard that.
And let's see what happens.
I've heard.
Here we go.
Okay, go ahead.
Question: does mouthwash increase your risk for type 2 diabetes? Click.
Yes. No.
Here's another one. Could mouthwash be putting you at risk of diabetes? Click.
Hmm.
Oh, here you go. Here's from Forbes. Regular use of mouthwash may increase risk for diabetes.
Wow.
The only thing I was going to say was, I don't know the amount of sugar.
Here we go.
How much sugar is in
this? Is Newsweek.
Yeah.
Newsweek.
Okay.
Well, mouthwash may trigger diabetes if you use way, way too much. And then the article says, however, the study doesn't show conclusively that mouthwash is causing diabetes.
Then why do the article?
Why have that
headline?
In Forbes?
Here's another one. Okay, this is from NCBI. This is PubMed.com. Regular article, over-the-counter mouthwash use and the risk of pre-diabetes. Okay?
Okay.
This is from the journal Nitric Oxide, not exactly medical journal for diabetes. It says frequently use of over-the-counter mouthwash was associated with an increased risk of developing prediabetes in this population. The effect estimates were similar after adding income, education, oral hygiene, oral conditions, sleep, breathing disorders, diet, medications, fasting, glucose, and some other things. So there you go. Now that's a little more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, it was associated with increased risk. Let's see what the increased risk was.
I'd be more concerned. Like as far as mouthwash is concerned, I don't consume alcohol, and I would be more interested in the study where they said if a person who used mouthwash that had alcohol in it was more likely to have a relapse or something. I mean,
Yeah, no, that's a concern. They said here most mouthwashes contain antibacterial ingredients, which could impact oral microbes critical for nitric oxide formation. Okay, there you go. That's why it was in the Journal of Nitric Oxide. And in turn, predisposed to metabolic disorders, including diabetes. Do you know what else is dependent on nitric oxide?
Not off the top of my head.
Sildenafil.
Tadalafil.
Yeah.
Right.
The active ingredient in Viagra. Or Cialis.
Yeah.
So they increase nitric oxide, which increases blood flow, which increases your meaty giant erection.
There you go.
It's quite okay. So anyway,
yeah.
So it's interesting. So I would like to see more study on this. We could certainly make mouthwashes that don't have all the antimicrobial stuff in them. That's easy.
I just get the one that doesn't have any alcohol. That's all I care about.
Yeah, yeah.
Dr. Steve, I was wondering if there is a difference between men's and women's formula of Rogaine. I think the men's has 5% active ingredient and the women's has 3%. And I was wondering if 3% is working pretty good for a female, if the men's formula, the 5%, would work even better.
Yeah, very tricky, trying to get me to recommend something off-label on the show. That's not something I can do. But I can tell you this, that Rogaine has been more extensively studied in men, and so they have a regular strength and an extra strength for men, and then they just have the regular strength for women. So... Rogaine is why I don't have as big a bald spot as it would be bigger than it is. I'm thinning on top, but it's not all the way bald.
It doesn't grow hair back, but it stops hair from falling out.
That's pretty much right. Yeah, okay. It extends the life of the hair follicle.
That's so cool that you're bringing this up because I wanted to actually ask you about this. I keep seeing a lot of commercials for that hat that has like 100 laser beams.
Yeah, it's crazy, but the laser stimulation actually has some data behind it.
Really?
Yeah.
I think they've only done, because I kind of was like, let me look. I thought they only did one study with that.
Yeah, I think it's not real deep data. We'll look here in a second. We're doing one of those shows where we can just look stuff up and take time.
But a hat full of laser beams. Mm-hmm.
So minoxidil, which is the active ingredient in Rogaine, was originally a blood pressure medicine.
Yeah, yeah.
And it says it's a potassium channel opener that causes hyperpolarization of cell membranes, and theoretically, it widens blood vessels and opens potassium channels. You got something? Are you drinking something over there? You have herpes?
No. Okay.
Thank you. Theoretically, by widening blood vessels and opening potassium channels, it allows more oxygen, blood, nutrients to the follicles, making the follicles live longer. That's the theory.
Okay.
My experience with minoxidil has been about a third of people get a really good result, a third of people get nothing, and then a third are kind of in between. And I'm sort of the in-between.
Gotcha.
It's delayed me developing the bald spot that all the men in my family have. Because at 63, I still have hair on the top,
right,
but it's really, really thin. All right. Now, could women take the 5%? I mean, you can buy this stuff over the counter. They can do whatever they want, but it's not indicated for women yet. But that's all. That's the only difference. All right.
Hi, Dr. Steve. I had a question about the difference between a low-calorie diet and a low-carb diet. So on a low-carb diet, you supposedly consume all of your glycogen, and then since you're not eating carbohydrates, you then start burning fat and release ketones as part of that process.
Give
also, in a low-calorie diet,
up.
You must also eventually consume all of your glycogen, even though you're already eating carbohydrates, because eventually you're burning fat, you know, since you don't have as many calories. So I wonder if you could talk to the difference between how a low-carb diet and a low-calorie diet burn fat.
Yeah, well, they both burn fat. And that's the end mechanism. If you eat fewer calories than you're burning every day, you have to lose weight. I mean, it's physics.
Mm-hmm.
The low-carb diet works a little bit differently because those people are burning fat even though they may be taking in prodigious amounts of calories. The true original ketogenic diet advocated by Adkins was a low-carbohydrate diet with high in green leafy vegetables and lean animal protein. And you didn't have to worry about fat. Yeah, and eggs and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but you could have meat. And you could have some bacon and things like that. But, you know, it morphed into this thing where people are only eating bacon and mayonnaise and cheese and meat.
Sounds pretty good.
And it just sounds good. But those they also lose weight, but they're losing weight partially because they're malnourished.
Right.
So you want to do a balanced low-carbohydrate diet, and that's for people who the low-calorie diet doesn't work for them, where they start craving food and stuff. Now, if you'll continue to just work through the craving like any other sort of pseudo-addiction, you can beat that with a low-calorie diet. If you're going to do low-calorie, you don't want to do super low-calorie for a long time. I know people do this HCG diet, they're doing 600 calories a day. Of course you're going to lose weight on that. It's basically fasting, a modified fast. But if you're going to do that, you don't want to just do carbohydrates. You need to add protein into the mix. Or one of the things that you will catabolize or break down is muscle, and that you don't want to do. It's fine to break down fat, and it's fine to deplete glycogen stores and all that stuff. What you don't want to do is deplete muscle. And if you don't take in enough protein, that's exactly what you'll do. So there's no one best diet. If there were, then we would already know what it is. We wouldn't be arguing about all these different diets, paleo and Mediterranean, all this stuff. So you got to find what works for you. Make sure it's balanced. You're getting the right nutrients. And all we're trying to do is mitigate risk over time. Vegan diet has been shown to, decrease risks for a bunch of. Would you do me a favor?
Yeah.
Would you run downstairs and just grab me either one of those, and I'll go buy you some more, just anything.
Okay.
Thanks. I'm having a hard time today, and it's probably all the vapor in here from these rock stars, whatever they're doing. So where was I? Oh. I don't remember what I was saying.
Oh, we were tight. Well, I was going to ask you a quick question.
Okay,
I don't know if you've heard of this particular diet or book or whatever. The book I read, part of it was called The 4-Hour Body.
Okay.
And
I know nothing about it.
Yeah, it's a high protein, low carb kind of thing. It's Atkins kind of sort of, I guess, ketogenic, whatever. But it involved a lot of what you could do is for 6 days you could it was.
See, I already hate this.
Yeah,
and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Before you and
you get a cheat,
you can still
you
ask
get a
your
cheat
question.
Day.
I don't give a shit.
I don't
like these diets where you have to do this for X number of days and then mm-hmm. you do this other thing for X number of days.
Why not?
Because it's not sustainable. You have to adopt a new lifestyle. Now, if you want to do that to kickstart your weight loss, like if you're 500 pounds and you want to lose your first 100 pounds doing that and then you kick in a healthy lifestyle to sustain and just kind of glide into that, I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
Even Dr. Ian Smith's fat smash idiocy, my opinion, purely my opinion, is totally fine.
Uh-huh.
To get things started.
Right.
But you've got to have a plan. And all of those books have plans. So few people ever get to that last chapter where it says, well, this is the maintenance phase.
Thank you.
You're a delight. Thanks.
I did, basically the beginning of the book, it says, if you want to do this, go to this chapter. Just skip all this other stuff. It's really cool the way that he has it set up.
Okay.
So he goes, all right, if you want to just lose weight, go to this chapter and read it and do what it says in here. So,
yep.
You pick a day, like you said, you're kind of against that as far as like there's a cheat day where it like you do everything for the 6 days. And then I picked Friday as my cheat day.
Okay.
And you can eat anything basically you want to eat. Or
shouldn't be called cheating though, because what are you cheating on? You know, you're just living your life.
It's a gift day. I don't know. But, I was going crazy. I could tell I needed carbs because the whole week I was eating spinach and chicken and eggs, all this stuff. And then I'm like, I feel I don't have a soul anymore. I need a cookie.
I know people do feel that way. And then what they do a lot of times, don't make this mistake, is you start craving carbs and you go to GNC and you buy these. They have these candy bars that have zero carbs and they're chocolate. And they have zero carbs, and, they've got a few calories.
Right.
But, and then you eat one, and it's like, oh, my God, this is chocolate. And then you eat three of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the way home from the store, because you crammed them in your mouth outside the store in the mall, you have to stop somewhere and evacuate your bowels that are just a tsunami of sorbitol-induced diarrhea has just gone through your bowel. Yeah. So it's really good to clean you out, but not good to sustain your life either.
Because those
things are sweetened with sugar alcohols and they're non-digestible. Yeah. Well, if they're non-digestible, you've got all these particles in your bowel. And what happens when you have solutes behind a semipermeable membrane? You remember from chemistry? Through osmosis, it draws fluid in. And so you're just drawing all this fluid into your bowel and you've got to evacuate it.
Right.
It's got to go somewhere.
Yeah.
So...
So
if you put a semi-permeable membrane between two tanks of fresh water,
mm-hmm.
and then you put a whole bunch of salt on one side, the fresh water will work its way across that membrane in an attempt to dilute out the salty side. And if you can make it so that the salt can't go in the other direction so it doesn't diffuse the other way, then you'll just get this big bloated thing of water on one side, and then the other side will be almost depleted. So,
ugh.
Osmosis, my friends.
There we go.
So there you go.
I saw the movie Osmosis Jones.
Is that a movie?
Yeah, it had it was a Fairley Brothers movie, but it was a cartoon and it had.
It was a cartoon. Yeah, okay, I remember that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well,
pretty
there
funny.
You go. Well, thanks for sharing that.
That's the only osmosis I'm into, Steve.
Okay, here, let's try. I think I figured this one out. Here we go.
Hi, Dr. Steve. Oh, thank you for your email. I know it's been a while. If I could speak in Appalachian
Anytime.
English as well as you taught on your last podcast, that would also be equally cool. I'm glad you like my accent as much as I enjoy yours.
We love it.
If you ever want me to do some sort of English recording of jingles or anything like that, I used to do... I used to read the news on radio, actually. So more than happy to do that if you want.
Bloody hell,
I actually am emailing
yeah.
I hope you don't mind, but I'd love to take you up on you asking if you could help me with my studies in any way.
Hang on. All right, it's 2019. Harvey, that accent, cut the crap.
Very quick question, and that's how do you learn quickly and retain information learning as an adult? Because although I'm 27, I'm not old hugely, but it feels a bit different now.
Yeah.
And I'm really keen to learn as much as I can, obviously, for getting into medicine.
Yep.
So how do you learn as an adult? What's the best way of doing it? Obviously, it varies hugely person to person, but if there are some tips that you could offer, I'd be so grateful. Thank you.
Well, wait, she had more.
Hope you're all well.
Of course. Oh, thank you. She's delightful.
Rare.
So here's the thing. I was 27 when I went to medical school, so I can relate to this issue. What you want to do as an adult learner when you're going to learn advanced things is capitalize on your motivation. That's the thing. That really is the only difference. At your age, there's really no difference between an 18-year-old and a 27-year-old as far as their ability to learn, other than at 27, you should have less distractions and you should be more highly motivated. So when you're, 18, you're going to college, you're trying to take prerequisites, and all of a sudden it's a new environment and you've got, frat rush and all this crap and
cake
just
stands.
Everything is streaking as in my case.
Hormones.
And hormones new.
You were a streaker, huh?
I was Ooh. Actually on Walter Cronkite.
Ooh.
Streaking. My ass was on Walter Cronkite.
On CBS.
Because I was at University of North Carolina and I was in Mangum Dormitory, which is in the North Campus. That's where streaking started.
Wow.
And we had a guy in my dorm that worked at Channel 11, which at that time was, I guess, the CBS affiliate. Yeah. And he brought cameras out, and they filmed it, and they sent it to the network. And then next thing I know, I see, because I had a Groucho Marx, one of those, glasses with the nose and the mustache. And I was going, my arms were gyrating like a maniac. And so it was unmistakably me.
Streaking
right past Walter Cronkite's face. It was the coolest thing ever.
There's a guy streaking in front of me.
Yep. It's a phenomenon called streaking. And the weird thing was is that my group, so we streaked out, and there's this whole crowd of people. They've been anticipating that and waiting for us all to come.
Mm-hmm.
And the dorm was 4 or 6 floors, I think it might have been 6, but at least 4, filled with naked men.
Oh,
okay. And then it just emptied out, starting from the bottom, and then it just emptied out, right?
Yeah.
And when we get to, I was on the second floor, so by the time we get, we get out by the library, we decided, by God, we're going to streak the library. Well, we didn't realize the other group, the bulk of the group didn't streak
they
the
went
library.
That way.
They went that way.
Oh, no.
So here we go. We go streaking through the library, which, of course, puts us way behind the main group, right? So we get back to the dorm. We went this big circuit of North Campus, and we come back around, and there's this crowd of people, and we're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Yeah, yeah. And people, the crowd is already gelled back.
Right.
They'd already let the streakers through into the dorm. They're all putting their clothes on, and the crowd is gelled back into a mob. And here we come smack into this wall of people, and they're like going, who the fuck are these guys? Who are these naked people? Now,
we're the real streakers.
Here's the damn thing. So I was wearing a tie, right? We couldn't run. There was no way. We had to walk through this crowd to get back into the dorm, and it was huge.
Right.
It was all over the street.
Walk of shame.
All of a sudden, when you're walking through a crowd and you're naked, now you're naked.
Okay.
All of a sudden, I didn't feel naked before because I was in a group of people and we were supposed to be there, but now I'm walking through a crowd of people and I feel naked. And there was this girl or woman from my speech class or something.
Okay.
And I had a thing for her anyway. She had these big, beautiful tits and stuff. And of course, there's the shrinkage.
Yeah. And there you are with your Groucho Marx.
Right. Well, fortunately, I think I threw that down at this point. And so I'm taking this tie. I had a necktie around my neck, and I was wrapping it around my junk trying to hide that. And she comes up and goes, you guys were awesome. And I'm like, oh, my God. Can this night ever end? It was so embarrassing. I never had the guts to ever ask her out.
Wow. They got to bring that back.
Yeah. Well, I think the people still do it, but it wasn't, you know, then.
They do it during games.
Then it was new.
They always cut away.
But I've never felt, have you ever had that dream where you go to class and you realize you forgot to put your pants on?
I always dream that I missed the whole semester.
Well, I had that, but yeah. I mean the naked dream where you're...
I've never had the naked dream.
You forgot to put your clothes on and you're walking around naked. Okay. Well, there are people listening to this. I lived that.
Oh my God.
Because you go from being part of a group, free and easy, to all of a sudden, oh my God, I'm naked. I felt like Adam and Eve when all of a sudden they ate the apple of knowledge of good and evil, and they all of a sudden they were naked.
Would you have dreams of you dreaming that you're like the third level of
that's
Inception?
Right. It could have been Inception. So, anyway, okay, so that's what you do, and use mnemonics. Excessively use mnemonics, because if you're going to learn new knowledge, what you want to do is apply it to a framework. You need to have a framework, and then like a scaffolding, and start hanging things from the scaffolding.
And get naked.
That's
there you go.
Don't get behind is number one. And do more than they expect. So if you have to do every other problem in the back of the book, just do every problem. If you're taking college physics, get Shom's College Physics. You can buy it. It's a paperback book. You can get it at Amazon. Do every problem in there, too. I used to have a friend, and he and I were doing prerequisites to go. He was going to dental school. I was going to medical school. Both of us had already graduated, so we were doing post-baccalaureate, prerequisites.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were all in the same classes, and we would just get these books, and we would just kill those chapters. And we would get together and just do the problem, do as over and over and over again.
Repetition,
until the first three words in the problem that they give you on the final exam, you already know what they're going to ask, you know?
Right.
It needs to get to the point where it's second nature. I did a lot of flashcards, used a lot of mnemonics. I still remember the cranial nerves from On Old Olympus Towering Top, A French and German View to Hop. And those, the first letters are all the first letters of all the cranial nerves, stuff like that. But basically capitalizing on your motivation. The way, when I went back to school after being out for a while working in TV and radio and then decided I wanted to do it, I was so motivated. It was really like taking candy from a baby. I always had the highest score on the final exam in my class because I was competing against a bunch of undergraduates, 18 mm-hmm. to 19-year-olds. And it really made a big difference. So you'll find it very easy, but just stay motivated and stay up to date. And matter of fact, stay a little bit ahead if you can. All right, and that's the best advice I can give you. And then let us know how your studies are going. I had a 44-year-old woman in my class in medical school. It's not that unusual. I thought I would be one of the oldest people at 27, but I was on the admissions committee, and I knew, I could see everybody's ages, and we did a arithmetic mean, and I was right in the mean. The mean in our class was 27. So, all right, very good. All right, let's do one more.
Okay.
Hey, Dr. Steve. This is Steve from New York. I'm listening to episode 368 on your podcast, and you're talking about putting people in the hospital and fasting them on 600 calories of protein.
Oh, here we go.
And having their blood sugars drop. 600 calories of protein is a lot.
Now,
we're in gluconeogenesis. Stop them from having a low blood sugar, or stop them from having a normal blood sugar, and keep them at an elevated blood sugar?
No, because it's not a lot of calories. And now 600 grams of protein may be a lot, but 600 calories of anything is, it's basically fasting or starvation. So that's why. And, that's just it. But we wouldn't...
Yeah.
We wouldn't just give them meat. I don't know where you got that idea. We would put them in the hospital and we would give them a 600 calorie diet. And it would be generally a balanced diet, but it would just be severely calorie limited. And what he's talking about is back in the day, stuff like that. Back in the day, if people's blood sugars got out of control, we didn't have a lot of pills back then that we could give, like metformin and stuff like that. So we would just put them in the hospital and fast them for 2 weeks. Yeah, yeah. Water's good for you. We would put them in the hospital and fast them for 2 weeks because you could put people in the hospital for 2 weeks back then just to give them a calorie-restricted diet. And when they came out, their blood sugars would be under better control for a long period of time. It's pretty neat. Now that's old-school stuff, though.
Now they have babies and they kick them out in the same
day. Oh, that's true. No, she. You can't hear what DJ Amanda's saying, but she said now you have a baby and they kick you out the same day. That's true. When I was training in the 80s, if you had a vaginal delivery, you were in the hospital 3 days, and if you had a C-section, it was 5 to 7 days. Now it's 1 day for the vaginal delivery and maybe 3 days that's for the crazy. C-section. So
turn and burn.
Yeah, that's right.
What?
That's right. All right. Well.
Hey, Dr. Steve. I have very dry skin on my testicles and around my penis. And just above that.
Get some lotion, man.
And I was wondering what could be causing this. I've tried bacterial creams and fungal creams, and nothing seems to get rid of it.
That's what I'm
okay. So one thing that you may want to do in a situation like this where he has dry skin but he doesn't know what's causing it is, yes, to get some lotion. That's right. I think lotion is a laudable suggestion, DJ Amanda. But, you know, there are a lot of different things that can cause this. There are fungi, there are eczema, you know, just an allergy. He could have a thing called, erythrasma. You're throwing me off.
Sorry.
It's okay. I'm getting a contact high just from being in the same room with you. Erythrasma is caused by a Carinii bacterium, and the only way that you can get rid of it is with a specific antibiotic. Yeah. So what you want to do is take a black light, and if you have access to a black light, shine it on your junk, and if that dry area lights up like a beautiful salmon color, and it's beautiful salmon color, if we could harness that in some way for other uses, it'd be very useful. But if it lights up a very beautiful salmon color, it's erythrasma, and only your primary care can. But they would be very impressed if you went in and said, "I think I have erythrasma," because I'll guarantee you they've probably only seen one or two cases in their life. Otherwise, you want to use an over-the-counter fungal cream like Lotrimin, but you got to use it for a long time. That's the thing. You know, it takes a week or 2 weeks, and
hydrate
do anything.
From the inside out.
Okay. Yes, you can hydrate from the inside out, but that's probably not just going to make isolated skin on the penis. Well, there you go. So then shut the fuck up because you don't know what you're talking about. And ultimately, the right place to go is a dermatology appointment. So if you don't get any luck with this, they'll scrape it. They'll look at it under a microscope. They'll do a potassium hydroxide test that will look for, for fungi or yeast, and they can treat that specifically. If they have to culture it, sometimes they'll only be sensitive to one or two Jesus Christ. Okay, we got to get out of here. Oh my God, she is losing her shit. Thanks always go to Dr. Scott, who isn't even here, to DJ Logan. And Super Android 23, DJ Amanda. We can't forget Rob Sprantz, Bob Kelly, Greg Hughes, Anthony Cumia, Jim Norton, Travis Teff, Lewis Johnson, Paul Ofcharski, Eric Nagel, Roland Campos, Sam Roberts, Pat Duffy, Dennis Falcone, Ron Bennington, Fez Watley, whose early support of this show has never gone unappreciated. Listen to our SiriusXM show on the Faction Talk channel, SiriusXM, channel 103, Saturdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, Sunday at 5 p.m. Eastern, on demand, and other times at Jim McClure's pleasure. Many thanks go to our listeners, whose voicemail and topic ideas make this job very easy. Go to our website at drsteve.com for schedules and podcasts and other crap. Until next time, check your stupid nuts for lumps. That includes you, DJ Amanda. Quit smoking, get off your asses, and get some exercise. We'll see you in 1 week for the next edition of Weird Medicine.
You understand why I don't?
I dig that shit.
That was cool.
I'm gonna get my bass out.
Thank you.